This is Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. Brubeck is a revered and respected name to jazz lovers everywhere, especially to the many friends and colleagues and even family members who live in the Central Valley. The third son in the family, Chris Brubeck, is a Grammy nominee, and he's just a favorite person in this region. He's a visitor that we're always happy to have in the studio, and he's here with us again. Hi, Chris.
Hi, it's great to be here again.
Thanks for flying in just to pop in on the show this morning.
I do so all the time.
And he's here with an old friend, another very big talent in the region. The two of them are teaming up for a concert this Saturday at the Harris Center in Folsom. It is Folsom Lake Symphony music director Peter Jaffe. Hello, maestro.
Well, great to be back again.
How is it when the two of you get together? How far back does your friendship go?
It goes quite a long ways, and Peter has a better accurate memory. But I got to tell you, for sure, I met Peter because my father was working with him in the Stockton Symphony Orchestra and said, you've got to meet this conductor. You guys will get along great. And he's taller than you.
No, Chris, I look up to you. Well, we could be a basketball team, but I think it was around the turn of the century because they had just landed the Brubeck Institute at the University of the Pacific. And I specifically remember you coming up the hall, the aisle of their hall there, and meeting you. And it really was really great to hit it off with him right away. And at that time, we were doing a premiere of Dave's called Millennium Intervals. But after that happened, Dave called me into his office that he had temporarily there at UOP and said, I hope you won't forget us. And I was going, are you crazy? How could you forget Dave Brubeck? And I said, let's do a festival. And it was that festival in 2003 where I first worked with Chris in a performing capacity. Mm. And we did your triple violin concerto, and we did your trombone concerto, and that trombone concerto is what he's going to be playing with us with the Folsom Lake Symphony this coming Saturday. And so it's kind of like a great reunion, not only with Chris, but with the piece. I haven't done the piece since then.
Ah, well, I have. You'll be happy to know.
I want to listen to a little bit of the music, but first of all, how much of a challenge was it for the musicians to learn this music?
Oh, you can't call it a challenge. You got to call it downright fun. I mean, we have been getting into the spirit of James Brown and all of these jazzy rhythms and everything like that. And so, yeah, Chris doesn't write easy music, but it's difficult music that is infectious, and you got to have a love for it, and you want to learn how to play it. So
okay.
It's been fun.
Here is what I think is the beginning of the first movement. We'll take a listen and then talk more.
Great.
Chris Brubeck there on bass trombone, and this weekend it's such an awesome opportunity to hear and watch you do that same music live, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, and it's fun, and I love working with other musicians, and it's fun to connect with the orchestra, and especially now that I've been out there doing this basically for like 50 years, and so many people say, oh, I played with your father once, or I saw you when you were a kid, or, you know, whatever. But all the ripples through time of a long career are always reconnecting when I play anywhere, and that's fun.
When was the recording we just heard made?
Ah, interesting question. I think that was probably made about 2000, something like that. I remember,
that was with the London group, right?
Right. It was the London Symphony, but it was right after Lady Di died in the accident. Because I remember being there at the recording sessions and seeing mountains of flowers in Kensington Park and things like that. So if that helps you put reference on it, that's how I think of that.
Now, we should know that Chris is not only amazing as a composer and on the bass trombone, but he's really a triple or quadruple threat. In the same concert, we're also playing Unsquare Dance in an arrangement that Chris made. And so Chris will be playing electric bass guitar in that piece.
Oh.
Plus, he will be singing. And so even though this was Dave's tune, Chris authored a really cute set of words for that song that he'll be singing along.
Yep, that's all true.
We wouldn't say anything that wasn't true.
Can you preview some of those lyrics? Could you speak them?
I guess. What's weird about Unsquare Dance is it's a blues, but it's in 7/4 time. So because of that 3 and 4 thing, instead of being a 12-bar blues, it's a 6-bar blues. And so the first words are, try playing the blues in old 7/4. It can drive you crazy for sure. Always looking for the 8th beat, or take one off, make it 6-inch cheap. But when you get used to it, it's not just your feet, Unsquare Dance.
Yeah, I love that.
And we're going to get the whole crowd snapping and clapping along in 7/4 time. It's really going to be a participatory celebration. It's really great.
You know, your story earlier, Peter, was a nod to the humbleness of Dave, that kind of quality of...
And Chris is humble that way, too.
And I think so. And I want to know, in your friendship, how much latitude the two of you have had, and the same with Peter, you and Chris's dad, in being really honest with each other about your craft or your music, the work that you do.
Oh, well, we're very honest. And in fact, even in pieces that he's not directly involved with, I've developed such a trust for Peter's skills of, like, he can look at a score that I'm working on, and I'll ask him questions when I hit sort of like, well, what would, there's 4 different ways I could write this. What's the smartest way to write it from a conductor's viewpoint or from the orchestra's viewpoint? Or can you help me out? What do you think about this bowing or that? And so I really turn to Peter a lot. As a matter of fact, he's been helping me with a new piece. So I don't dominate here. You tell him about
that. Well, Chris has written a piece that could have been done years ago, but it didn't need to when Dave was still alive. But since he died just a few years ago at the age of almost 92, Chris has fashioned something called the Time Out Suite, which is going to have a lot of the best tunes from that famous album, like Take 5 or Blue Rondo a la Turk. It's actually going to be premiered by the Stockton Symphony this coming January. And so we've been working on that project. And what's really unusual for any composer is that Chris has already finished it. and it's par for the course that usually composers are, you know, like putting their finishing touches, but you know, up until the last minute. But to get back to your other question about our working relationship, one of the first early project premieres we did together had a very unusual arc. Chris wrote a piece that I asked him to do. I asked him to do a theatrical/orchestral piece. I didn't have the faintest idea what the topic would be, but I just knew from having done Mendelssohn's Midsummer Night's Dream that it would be really cool to do a piece where, instead of singing, there would be actors on stage with microphones. Chris was the one who came up with the idea of coming up with the complete arc of Mark Twain's life. And so he wrote a piece called Mark Twain's World. And we violated every single rule in the creation process, because usually what a conductor and an institution will do will say, we want you to do this instrumentation, we want it to be about this long, and here are the stats. And what we ended up doing was, Chris kept sending me sketches, and I kept saying, this is amazing. Keep going, man. And so we wound up with a piece that was 1 hour and 3/4 long. And so what we had to do is kick the rest of the music off the program. And this just became the entire program.
Was it the
program.
The unfinished symphony? It became the unplayed symphony.
Yeah.
Well, if jazz is in your DNA, you're all about breaking the rules then, right?
Absolutely. And I had such a template. That's funny. I sounded like a Jewish person. Yeah, such a template. You know, but I... recently was reconnecting with Jamie Bernstein, Leonard's daughter, and we were reminiscing. We met when we were kids, but now she's, because it's Bernstein's centennial, she's been out for 3 years, you know, just
touring,
losing her
talking,
mind with so much, all these performances and stuff. But, you know, we were reminding each other that both of our fathers pioneered this thing where, like, Leonard Bernstein is one of the few conductors that didn't look down his very long, coattails and formal wear at jazz, that slum music, you know. He actually played nightclub tunes in the Great American Songbook. So he was totally into the idea that you could use a group like the Dave Brubeck Quartet, just like you'd use, you know, classical soloists in front of an orchestra.
Well, there's even a recording of Bernstein doing Howard Brubeck tunes, too.
Right.
And of course, Bernstein infused all that jazz into West Side Story and so many other pieces, too.
Yeah, when you hear the great tunes of West Side Story, like, how could someone who looked down their nose at American popular music have written such great things? And I often say, what would have happened to American classical music if it weren't for Copland and Bernstein when everyone sort of chased the Bernstein bandwagon off the cliff, you know?
But here's the thing. Chris is not just about jazz. I mean, he's an expert at it, and he infuses his music with that. But he's really all about the total spectrum of popular American music. And if you listen to the last movement of his trombone concerto, it's really all about James Brown, the King of Soul.
I don't know if we're going to get to that part of it, but let's start listening to the last movement and see how it evolves. Chris,
yeah.
Can you jump in here and sing along as you hear this music? Give us a vocal track.
No.
You were scatting a moment ago.
Well, I was just trying to explain that that's, you know, the average listener goes, well, what does this have to do with James Brown? And I'm saying, you know, some of the classic stuff is bo-dum-bop, tweet-up, do-ga-da-dope, tweet-up, little triads. And so that's in the woodwinds, but coming up in a ways, we get to a point where it gets more overt. And the reason I wrote this piece originally was because it was a commission from a youth symphony orchestra. And it was like for just a ridiculously small amount of money. And I said, you know, that's, you know, it's not insulting, but it's just ridiculous. But I have a more ridiculous proposition. I've always wanted to write a trombone concerto for myself. And only one thing will make me do it is if I have a commission and a deadline. So how about I'll be your soloist, and for your youth orchestra, I'll write this concerto. And so I knew what the group was like, and for somehow, it wasn't the world's greatest youth orchestra, but they had a killer, funky drummer. And he was coming back the next year. So I said, well, if it swings, that's something going for it right there. So that's part of the reason why this turned out to be this thing. It's got this, when the piano's going boom, 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 this chromatic ascending thing. And that kind of reminded me of, you know, Rod Serling's Twilight Zone. And then we had the James Brown thing. And I just, you know, Keith Lockhart, I think, asked me, well, what do you want to call this thing? I said, well, James Brown in the Twilight Zone. And he said, I love that title. And oddly enough, it was this piece that really launched my composing career, because I had done a gig with the Boston Pops. And it's the same instrumentation, same players as the Boston Symphony. And the bass trombonist said, hey, Chris, you ever written anything? And I just said, yeah, well, you know, I wrote this trombone concerto, having no idea it would be meaningful at all in any way. But he asked me to send him a copy, and I did. And he went nuts, and he played it live with the Boston Pops and was televised all over the world. I mean, bass trombone concertos don't get televised. And then almost every top bass trombonist with every symphony played it. And pretty soon, Keith Lockhart kept asking me to write different pieces, and that was 20 years ago, and all I do is I'm writing all the time.
And that this is, piece of, I do want to say, though, that people can hear you, because you will be performing that music this Saturday at 7:30 with the Folsom Lake Symphony at the Harris Center. Maestro Peter Jaffe will be conducting. Before you go, you mentioned the Brubeck Institute. I know a lot has changed since the passing of your dad and the family honoring the legacy. Can you tell me what's changing with the Brubeck Institute, the name and the relationship with UOP?
Yeah, well, we accomplished a lot with the University of Pacific. But over those years, there was a sort of a renewal time. And it got to the point, and each party had their different reasons, like maybe it wasn't the best thing to continue. So our family started a nonprofit called Brubeck Living Legacy. We're continuing David and Iola's work, and we'll be able to make nimble partnerships all over the world. And so that's all moving forward, and we're going to keep good relationships there. But the actual Brubeck Institute is not going to be there starting next year. And also, we got a new thing we're doing, too.
Chris, we're going to hold that thought because the chair and the mic are always open to you in the future, but we are running out of seconds here. So,
all righty.
Maestro Jaffe, Chris
so
Brubeck,
great to see you
thank
again,
you
Ben.
So much.
We'll see you at the
concert
hall.
That's Insight for today. Thank you.